Rayam nam namaskritya naram cheva nirottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 30, Chapter entitled The Gopi's Search for Krishna, Text Number 3. Ati smita prekshana bhashana dishu.
Ati smita prekshana bhashana dishu.
Gati smita prekshana bhashana dishu.
Gati smita prekshana bhashana dishu.
Priya priyasya pratiruta murtaya.
Priya priyasya pratiruta murtaya.
Priya priyasya pratiruta murtaya.
Priya priyasya pratiruta murtaya.
Asavaham tvitya balastadatmika.
Asavaham tvitya balastadatmika.
Asavaham tvitya balastadatmika.
Asavaham tvitya balastadatmika.
Nyavedishu Krishna vihara vibrahma. Nyavedishu Krishna vihara vibrahma.
Nyavedishu Krishna vihara vibrahma.
Gati smita prekshana bhashana dishu.
Gati smita prekshana bhashana dishu.
Priya priyasya pratiruta murtaya.
Priya priyasya pratiruta murtaya.
Asavaham tvitya balastadatmika.
Asavaham tvitya balastadatmika.
Nyavedishu Krishna vihara vibrahma.
Nyavedishu Krishna vihara vibrahma.
Gati smita prekshana bhashana dishu.
Gati smita
gati. In his movements. Smita.
Smita.
Smiling.
Smiling.
Prekshana.
Prekshana.
Beholding.
Beholding.
Vasha.
Vasha.
Sorry. Vashana.
Vashana.
Talking.
Talking.
Adishu.
Adishu.
And so on.
And so on.
Priya.
Priya.
The dear gopis.
The dear gopis.
Priyasya,
Priyasya,
of their beloved,
of their beloved.
Pratiruta,
Pratiruta,
fully absorbed,
fully absorbed.
Murtaya,
Murtaya,
their bodies,
their bodies.
Aso,
Aso,
he,
he.
Ahom,
Ahom,
I,
I.
Tu,
Tu,
actually,
actually.
Iti,
Iti,
speaking thus.
Abala,
the women.
Women.
Tad Atmika,
Tadatmika,
identifying with him.
Identifying
Nya Vedishu.
Nya Vedishu.
They announced.
Krishna
Vihara.
Krishna Vihara.
Caused by the pastimes of Krishna.
Caused by the pastimes of Krishna.
Vibrahma.
Vibrahma.
Whose intoxication?
Whose intoxication?
Translation in purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Because the beloved gopis were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna, their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling, his way of beholding them, his speech and his other distinctive features. Deeply immersed in thinking of him and maddened by remembering his pastimes, they declared to one another, "I am Krishna." Translation responsibly.
Because the beloved gopis
were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna. Their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling.
Their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling.
His way of beholding them.
His way of beholding them.
His speech.
His speech.
And his other distinctive features.
And his other distinctive features.
Deeply immersed in thinking of him.
Deeply immersed in thinking of him.
And maddened by remembering his pastimes.
And maddened by remembering his pastimes.
They declared to one another.
They declared to one another.
I am Krishna.
I am Krishna.
Purport. Spontaneously, the gopis began moving like Krishna. They smiled as he would smile, glanced boldly as he would, and spoke as he would. The gopis were completely absorbed in the existence of Krishna, and mad with love at their sudden separation from him. And thus their dedication to him attained absolute perfection. Omigyan timanandushya ginanjana shalakaya chakshun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manopishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam tadati sva padantikam vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha Petitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Rama, Hare Hare. So in the very first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and the invocation, the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, then Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this verse. And Srila Jiva Goswami is the topmost commenter on our philosophy. He wrote more than anyone else in terms of expanding the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. His Sandarbhas, which are just being translated now by the BBT at Govardhan, they will come out. It will take 12 years to finish them. It is said that in his writings he has written 400,000 shlokas elaborating upon the Bhagavad philosophy. Now you can just imagine how many verses that is, because how many verses is the Srimad Bhagavatam itself? 18,000. So Jiva Goswami has written 400,000 verses expanding upon the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this commentary is in six parts. He's written other things as well, but his primary work, one of his most important works is the Sandarbhas, Naishat Sandarbhas, which is six books which expand upon the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he is considered to be the foremost authority and acharya in expanding the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Out of all of our acharyas, he has expanded it more than anyone else. Even today in India, he is practically known in many places as practically the greatest philosopher of all time. Especially in modern history, no one has written more than him. So his scholarship is paramount. No one really comes close to him. And his title is Prabhupada. There are not very many personalities within our tradition who receive this title, Prabhupada. Of course, our Srila Prabhupada is known as Prabhupada. Prabhupada means one at whose feet all other masters sit. So this title is rarely given like that. But our Prabhupada, he has it. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, he has the title. His Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur, was also called Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were both called Srila Prabhupada. And Jiva Goswami was also called Srila Prabhupada. So this shows his exalted position. At the feet of at whose feet all other masters sit. So he has written in his commentary on the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, he has written in the commentary that the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is describing the relationship between Radha and Krishna. Because ultimately, the 10th canto is called the Ashraya, or the Samam Bonam of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the final resting place of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or it is the topmost philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the topmost rahasya or secret of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is ultimately glorifying Krishna and the love of Krishna's devotees for Krishna. This is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is ultimately describing. And the 10th canto, which is considered to be the topmost exposition of the devotee's love for Krishna, is describing the resonance of Vrindavan, their love for Krishna, which is considered to be the strongest of all devotees' love for Krishna. And even amongst the resonance of Vrindavan, is considered that those in Madhurya Ras or Ujjwala Ras, the gopis of Vrindavan, their love for Krishna is considered to be the topmost, supreme love. And out of all the gopis, it is concluded that Srimati Radharani has the most intense and perfect love for Krishna out of all personalities in existence. So Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on the very first verse of the Bhagavatam, he says that Srimati Radharani is so perfect in her love for Krishna that she alone can totally and fully satisfy Krishna by herself. There is no need for any other person to satisfy Krishna. Now, she is the topmost personality in existence. So Srimati Radharani is being glorified in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam because Krishna has left the rasa dance. Now, why did he leave the rasa dance?
Because
the gopis became proud, right? But actually, it's not possible for the gopis to become proud because the gopis are Krishna's eternal associates. They're his own shakti. They're his own hladini shakti, or his internal potency. And especially out of all the gopis, Srimati Radharani is hladini shakti personified. One time, I think it was here in Melbourne, Prabhupada was asked, who is Srimati Radharani? One of the devotees said to Prabhupada, who is Radharani? And what did Prabhupada answer? Does anyone remember?
She's Krishna.
Yeah. Prabhupada says, she is Krishna. Right? So that doesn't mean she is Krishna, but Prabhupada says she is Krishna. So because Prabhupada says she is Krishna, it doesn't mean she is Krishna, but if Prabhupada said it, then she is Krishna. So what it means is that Srimati Radharani is Krishna because there is no difference between Krishna and Krishna's energy. So therefore she is Krishna. She is Krishna's Hladini Shakti. What is the Hladini Shakti?
Pleasure potency.
Yeah, we say, Lord Brahma says, Ishwara Parama Krishna, Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. So spirit is made up of these three divisions, right? Eternality, Sat Chit Ananda, right? Eternality, knowledge, and bliss, Vigraha, in form, right? God is not formless. God is a personality. Right, Vigraha means he is a form, right? So his form is made of Sat, Chit, Ananda, eternality, knowledge and bliss. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says Sat is called Sandini Shakti and Chit is called Samvit Shakti and Ananda or bliss is called Hladini Shakti. So Radharani is the personification of Krishna's bliss potency, right? His own internal potency for pleasure, right? So she is Krishna. She is Krishna's energy. So his energy and him are not different. It is his pleasure potency. But still, she is different. She is one with him, but she is different from him also. So, Srimati Radharani is Krishna's Haladini Shakti, which means she is Krishna's pleasure potency. She is created, not that she is created, she eternally exists, but she is created solely to give Krishna pleasure. And Jiva Goswami says in the first verse of the Bhagavatam in his commentary, she gives Krishna so much pleasure, she is so expert in giving Krishna pleasure, there is no need for Krishna to have any other devotee to be satisfied. Right? So then why do we exist? why do we exist? What is the purpose of our existence? Why are we here? Because it is the nature that if you are experiencing something wonderful, you want to share it with others. That is the nature of a blissful experience. Right? If you're experiencing something wonderful, naturally you want to give it to everyone else. You don't want to keep it all to yourself. Right? So that is the nature of Krishna and Srimati Radharani. Although they are enjoying unlimitedly, they want everyone else to enjoy it also. So then all of us manifest. Not that we manifest, we're always there. But we are there because they want to expand their love. Right? They want it to flood out to everyone else. Everyone else can drink it to their unlimited satisfaction also. So this is their purpose. That is why we all are created. So in this pastime we see that Srimati Radharani even becomes proud. That actually that's not possible. It's not possible for pride, which is an anatta or a fault, right? It is not possible for a fault to rise in the consciousness of Srimati Radharani and the eternal gopas, the eternal gopis, the Nichasiddha gopis. So the acharyas describe it as a pastime of yoga maya. Yoga maya has covered them with some pastime potency for Krishna's pleasure, so that they will feel proud. Right? It's not actually arising in their heart, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out the nature of the most advanced devotees is that they think they're the most fallen. Right? So if they're the most advanced devotees, how can they possibly think that they are superior to others? That cannot arise in their consciousness. It's not possible at any time in history for Radharani to become proud, right? Or for any of the other gopis to become proud. It's not possible. So therefore Yogamaya arranges it because it gives Krishna pleasure. It gives the pastime potency pleasure, right? It allows a pastime to manifest. So Krishna feels, oh, they are becoming proud, so therefore he disappears. And then we see as the chapter unfolds that he goes off with one gopi, and that is Srimati Radharani. Although Shukadeva Goswami, who is Shukadeva Goswami in his eternal, in the eternal pastimes of Radha and Krishna?
Shuka.
Shuka. Shuka means?
Parrot.
The parrot, right? So he is Krishna's parrot. So he flies messengers in between Krishna and Srimati Radharani. Krishna speaks, he says, go and tell Radharani this. And then he flies off and he speaks to Radharani. The Radharani says, tell Krishna this. And then flies back. Right? Most intimate associate, Shukadeva Goswami. So, interestingly enough, here's Radharani and Krishna's most intimate associate, one of their most intimate servants. But he doesn't directly mention the name of Radharani in the Bhagavatam. Right? Even though Jiva Goswami says that virtually the point of the Bhagavatam is to glorify Radharani as being the topmost devotee, he never directly mentions her name. And it's explained, the acharyas have commented, that if Shukadeva Goswami had mentioned Srimati Radharani's name during the 7 days when he was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, he would have gone into a trance. Just thinking of Srimati Radharani, and the Bhagavatam would not have been finished. Which would have been extremely inconvenient for Maharaj Parikshit and for everyone in Kali Yuga. Because everyone in Kali Yuga, we need the Srimad Bhagavatam. If we didn't have the Srimad Bhagavatam, we couldn't go back to Godhead in Kali Yuga. So therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam was given to us. So therefore he withheld his ecstasy of directly mentioning Srimati Radharani's name so that the Bhagavatam could be decided completely. But he mentions that one particular gopi went off with Krishna. And the acharyas are pointing out that was Radharani who was with Krishna. And then Radharani became proud. Right? So So it's not that actually Radharani became proud, but once again Yogamaya covered Radharani so that she could, she felt pride so that Krishna could leave her also, so that the whole pastime could manifest. So here we see in this verse that the gopis were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna. Their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling, his way of beholding them, his speech and his other distinctive features. This is a symptom of that's the highest state of love of God, like that. It is, in general, a symptom of Krishna prema, or love for Krishna, right? This is Krishna consciousness in its most perfect form. We see that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Shastras, it is mentioned that the devotees become so absorbed in Krishna that when Krishna is not with them, they become overwhelmed, right? And sometimes they become so overwhelmed, they even begin to imitate Krishna. One nice example is given of Uddhava in the Nectar of Devotion, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that Uddhava is Krishna's topmost friend in Dwarka. Right? So Uddhava, his complexion is the same colour of Krishna. It's the same colour as Krishna's. Right? Because he's so absorbed in love for Krishna that his complexion turned the same colour of Krishna. Right? I mean, can you imagine being that much attached to Krishna, that your skin changed? You know, Pete came in from Mangalwadi and he was blue. I said, "Pete, what happened? Did you fall in the blue barrel of paint?" He says, "No," with tears in his eyes and his voice choked up and his hair standing on end. "Ramancha kampashru taranga bhajo." "No, I'm simply remembering Krishna." So Uddhava is so absorbed in Krishna. Uddhava dresses, he wears a yellow dhoti. Why does he wear a yellow dhoti? Yeah, because it is Krishna. Krishna wears yellow. So he wears yellow dhoti. Because Krishna wears it, he wears it. He is the same colour as Krishna. He turned the colour of Krishna. He will only eat Krishna's remnants. He won't eat unless it is Krishna's remnants. If someone gives him Krishna's remnants, he takes. If it's not Krishna's prasadam, he doesn't touch it. That's how Krishna conscious he is. Right? So the gopis, and when Uddhava, it's described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Uddhava came to Vrindavan and he saw the love of the gopis for Krishna and how Krishna conscious they were, he said, "I have no love for Krishna." Mm-hmm. And that's Uddhava, who has total love for Krishna. But when he saw the gopis, he said, "I don't have any love. They have love." Right? So they're here in this pastime and they're absorbed fully in Krishna's mood. No? Because Krishna has disappeared, automatically they're just absorbed. And they're even so mad in love for Krishna, it says here at the end of the verse, they declare to one another, "I am Krishna." Not that they think I am Krishna. Not that they think now I am God. Like that. It's not some impersonalistic conception or anything like that. It's nothing based on illusion. They're so absorbed in Krishna, they say, "I am Krishna." And they're all performing different pastimes, right? Remembering Krishna's different pastimes, right? Acting them out, right? And they're just absorbed in Krishna. That's how Krishna conscious they have become. In the purport it says, spontaneously, they began moving like Krishna and spoke as he would. The gopis were completely absorbed in the existence of Krishna and mad with love at their sudden separation from him. And thus their dedication to him attained absolute perfection. So the Acharyas describe that in this state of consciousness, there is not actually any separation from Krishna. Right? Even though physically they're separated from Krishna, right? There is no separation from Krishna at that point in time. So how is it that you can be separated from Krishna and not separated from Krishna? Right? How is it that we can be with Krishna and not with Krishna?
By consciousness, by remembering Krishna.
Yeah, by remembering Krishna. Rasi, is it something? be absorbed in Krishna. Because the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is abhinitva naminamino, right? There is no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name, right? There's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's form. There's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's qualities. There's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. There's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's abode. There's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's paraphernalia, right? It is all non-different. So therefore, even when they appear to be separated from Krishna, in their mind they immediately think of Krishna. Right? Just like last year in Kartik, or just after Kartik, we went on the Govardhan retreat, and we went to one village where Lalita Devi, who was the dearmost friend of Srimati Radharani, where she used to live. Right? Does anyone remember what the name of that village is?
Uchigan?
Yeah, Uchigan. Like that, Uchchagram. So this place is just behind Varshana, right? And it is a place where Lalita Devi lived. Radharani lived in Varshana and Lalita Devi lived there in Uchchagram. So at that place, one time, Krishna came. And Srimati Radharani and Lalita were bathing in a kund, which is just behind the hill. Very beautiful kund. Very ecstatic kund. And they were bathing there. And then Krishna came along, and Krishna said to them, you are thieves. Thieves. Chora. You are thieves. And therefore, he comes to the gopis and says, you are thieves. Right? And he says, this is Krishna's leelas, right? Very sweet speech, very attractive speech, charming speech. So he comes and he says, you are thieves. He says, you must give me charity. Right? So normally, right, we've read in the previous chapter, Lalita and Radharani and those left-wing gopis are not submissive to Krishna. If Krishna comes and says something like that to them, what do they normally say? Right? They say to Krishna, Krishna says, you are a thief. And they say, actually, you are a thief. Right? And Krishna says, you have to give charity. He said, no, you will give charity. Like that. They're never submissive to Krishna. But on this particular occasion, Lalita said, Krishna said, give me charity. And Lalita said, what do you want? And then Lalita said, actually, I've given you my heart. I've given you everything. So he said, what do I have to give you? Everything is yours. I am yours. So what do I have to give you? And she said to him, I will give you my form. So whenever you think of me, I will personally appear in your mind. It will be me. I'll personally be there in your mind. And then we'll always be together. And Krishna was so overwhelmed, he began to shed tears. And then Krishna said, then I will give you my form. And then whenever you think of me, I will be there in your heart. It will be me. Like that. So this is how, when the gopis or any of the devotees are separated from Krishna, they're not actually separated from Krishna. It is Krishna who is there, right? So Krishna is non-different from his name, from his form, from his qualities, from his pastimes. So when Krishna appears to separate himself, or he appears to disappear from the rasa dance, and they remember Krishna, Krishna was physically present one moment before, Krishna was there, they were in association with Krishna, and then Krishna left, then Krishna is still there, just as much as he was, because he is remembered by them so intensely, it is him they are remembering. So he's not actually gone. Right? It's just a different thing. Or in other words, Prabhupada describes it. When Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura, which we'll read in about another 10 or 15 chapters, when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, he goes to Mathura, right? Then at that time, he externally left Vrindavan. Prabhupada describes Krishna entered into the hearts of the bridge buses, right? Because externally he disappeared, he wasn't visible anymore, but he went into their hearts, right? So it is the same Krishna. Whether he's internally manifest or externally manifest, it is the same personality. So in this way, the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan are always associating with Krishna. But the only difference is the mood in the association. One is called Vipralamba, and the other one is called Sambhog. What does Vipralamba mean? Separation. It means Krishna is not there. Right? Krishna is not externally present. He's not externally manifest, so they feel separated from him. And what does sambhog mean? Union, right? So it means that Krishna, who is in the heart, who is manifest internally during Vipralamba, he becomes externally manifest in sambhog, which means they unite with him. He becomes externally present again. So because he's externally present, then they are with him either way. But when he's externally present, they feel relief. They feel united with him. So they feel pacifying. They feel peaceful. Oh, Krishna is with us. They feel very happy, very peaceful. But when Krishna is gone and then he goes within, they feel intense separation. Although they're not separated, they feel intense separation. That is called Vipralamba. And that makes the sambhog, or the union, sweet. When they do come back with him and he externally manifests, they feel relief, right? Like walking through the desert, right? You're walking through the desert, right? And you're just feeling, all you can meditate on is water, 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 water. And then you see a oasis in the distance and you begin to run towards it, right? Because all you can think of is water. And then when you get to the water, you just dive in, right? And you just drink, right? And drink and drink and drink and drink, and just you're fully satisfied. So that's what the residents of Vrindavan, the pure devotees, feel like. They feel separated from Krishna, and when finally they get back to be with him, they're just fully absorbed, you know, fully satisfied once again. So, what do we do? Or what should we do? Because we are separated from Krishna. Right? Krishna is separated from us, but there's a little bit of difference between the separation of that we are experiencing, the separation the residents of Vrindavan are experiencing, right? They're feeling separation from Krishna and they're not separated from Krishna. We're feeling separation from Krishna and we are separated from Krishna, and we're not really separated from Krishna, but we are, and we don't really care. So it's a very different thing, right? We're separated from Krishna and we don't mind being separated from Krishna. Most of the time we don't think about Krishna so much. Or we do think of Krishna, but it's not deep, or it's not absorbed by the residents of Vrindavan. It's not that kind of attachment to Krishna. That hasn't formed properly yet. So then how do we become attached to Krishna? Right? So this is the process of devotional service. Right? And especially the five main angas of bhakti. Now, what are the five main angas of bhakti? Yeah, Bhagavat Shravan. To hear the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Sadhu Sangha.
Sadhu Sangha. To associate with advanced devotees. Chanting. Nam Sankirtan. To chant the holy names.
Yeah. Mathura Vas.
Mathura Vas. Which means to reside in a holy place like Mathura or Vrindavan or Mayapur. Like that.
Jivam.
Yeah, we had that one already. And then deity worship, which is Sri Murtir, Shradaya, Sevan, to serve the deity with great faith and great devotion. Right? So this is the ways to become associated with Krishna. Right? Because although we are separated from Krishna here in the material world, by associating with these five personalities, they are non-different from Krishna. The Bhagavatam, the holy name, the advanced devotees, the holy Dharma and the deity are not different from Krishna. So by associating with them, then we get Krishna's association. Right? And by getting Krishna's association, we become purified, right, by his association. And therefore we're not separated from him. Although in the material world we have come a long, long way away from Krishna. But by associating with Krishna in these different forms, then we become reconnected to him once again. Right? So this is the whole purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And you see, ISKCON, basically ISKCON is made up of those five activities. Right? Chanting the holy name, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Associating with the devotees, worshipping the deities, and residing in a holy place. Right? So in this way, this is basically how we become reconnected to Krishna once again. This is how to become Krishna conscious. This is how to overcome our separation from Krishna. Because all of these items of devotional service are non-different from Krishna. So this is the point, that we need to associate with that which is non-different from Krishna. And the more seriously we associate with these items which are non-different from Krishna, the more we advance in Krishna consciousness. Right? We have to learn to chant the holy name constantly. Right? How does Lord Chaitanya teach us to chant the holy name? Kirtaniyaha Sadahari. Right? You must constantly chant the holy name of Krishna. It's interesting because those five angas, which the Panchanga Bhakti, which are the five most powerful items, Bhakti Sananta Sarasvati Thakur, the Srila Prabhupada spiritual master, says that all of them, for their potency to manifest, four of them, it all depends on chanting of the holy name. Right? It's only by chanting the holy name that the potency of the others manifest. In other words, you get appreciation of the association of the devotees when you chant the holy name together. Right? If you don't chant with the devotees, right? If you don't do kirtan with the devotees, you can't appreciate the devotees. Right? If you don't hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you're not chanting nicely, then the Srimad Bhagavatam does not manifest properly. That's why we have kirtan before we hear the Bhagavatam. Have the kirtan, purify the consciousness by the holy name, then the Srimad Bhagavatam can be heard and relished. Worship the deity, all the way through deity worship, one must be chanting the holy names. That is the process of deity worship. Right? By chanting the holy names, you realize the deity. Right? You realize Krishna as a personality by chanting his name while doing that. And residing in the holy Dham, now, the holy Dham only becomes manifest when one is chanting the holy name. Right? This temple is a holy Dham. You can only appreciate this temple if you have kirtan. Right? If you do kirtan in the temple, you dance and chant before the deities, the temple becomes ecstatic. It becomes Vaikuntha. It becomes Vrindavan. Right? You don't see it in the mundane way. You see it in a purified way. So this is the way to become Krishna conscious, to associate with Krishna through these five potent items of bhakti. And Lord Chaitanya says the most important of, or it is pointed out, the most important or the hub of all the others is the chanting of the holy name, which he says must be done constantly. We must learn to constantly chant. Why do we chant 16 rounds a day? Because it teaches us to constantly chant. It's not okay, and then you pick your beads, you don't wait till the next day, and then you pick your beads up again the next day, and put them down, right? And then you don't chant anything, and then next day, no, you're supposed to be chanting all the time. That's just to habituate the tongue, to get the tongue used to chanting once again. But if you want to chant all the time, then Lord Chaitanya says there are qualifications. One must be more humble than a blade of grass. One must be more tolerant than a tree. One must be devoid of all sense of false prestige. And one must be ready to offer all respect to others. In that state of mind, you can chant constantly. Because if you're not in that state of mind, whenever someone does something which disturbs you, automatically you'll become fixed on that. But if you're in an extremely humble, extremely tolerant state of consciousness while chanting, then your chanting cannot be disrupted. Because if someone insults you or disturbs you, you just think, well, that's okay, because I'm lower than a blade of grass anyway. I'm more tolerant than a tree anyway, so it really doesn't matter what they do. Right? So if you're in that state of consciousness, the chanting can go on and on. And this way we can remember Krishna and realize Krishna. And that is the goal. Our goal is to absorb ourselves in Krishna, following in the footsteps of these great devotees of Krishna, such as... Srimati Radharani and the Gopis of Vrindavan, like that. They're the topmost devotees, and we aspire to one day become their followers, like that. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. It's in the... I think it's in the Tattva Sandarbha, it's in one of the Sandarbhas. And if you read the like the word for word translation which Prabhupada gives in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, you know, it says Janmad Yasyam, it says, you know, from him comes creation, comes destruction, comes maintenance. says all these different things. He is Swarat. He is Adikavi. Gives all these different qualities of Krishna. So it describes that he is like this, he is like that. But the way Jiva Goswami translates the words or interprets the words, each one of them means something about Radharani and something about Krishna. Like that. It's actually, it's a commentary, it's not like just a speculation of his. It's just that he is so advanced in his consciousness and so pure, and he's such an exalted Vrindavan devotee that he can see that Srila Vyasadeva is actually speaking about Radha and Krishna. Because ultimately the Srimad Bhagavatam is to glorify Radha and Krishna, that's what's taking place. I haven't come across that, but it could be like that. Could be another commentary by Jiva Goswami. I'm not sure. I haven't heard it, but it's possible. Any other question?
There's a quote from Radharani where she says, if Krishna's pleasure is my... Where is that from?
Well, it's actually the last verse of Shikshastika that's spoken by Radharani. That's because Shikshastika, the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness is within Shikshastika. The entire Srimad Bhagavatam is in Shikshastika. Like that. So Krishna consciousness begins from Shraddha and goes to Prema. Like that. So that is within Shikshastika. Like that. The different verses go from Shraddha to Prema. Like that. So the final verse is spoken in Mahabhava, which is the topmost level of Prema. And it's Mahaprabhu in the mood of Radharani, which is his mood. And he's saying, whether you handle me roughly by your embrace or make me broken-hearted by not being present before me, still I am your servant, birth after birth. And then the commentary, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur, then they elaborate further. They more or less say what Mahaprabhu says, but then they say it even more elaborately too. They're the first two features of pure devotional service. It's described in Nectar of Devotion, like that. So if you read the beginning chapters of Nectar Devotion, within the first two chapters or first three chapters, it will describe about Shubhadha and Kleshagni. And there's a book that came out by Damodar Swami called Waves of Devotion. You might have seen that book. Well, if you really want to understand, then you get a copy of that book.
Mm.
And then, I don't know if it's in the shop or not. And then he analyzes even further Kleshagni and Shubhadha. Kleshagni means destruction. And also Madhurya Kanambini. If you read in there, by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, if you read in there, that also gives a description or an analysis of Kleshagni and Shubhadha. Kleshagni means destruction of inauspicious things. That's what, when we first begin sadhana bhakti, then inauspicious qualities begin to become purified from our consciousness, hopefully. And the other quality is shubhadha, which means kleshagni means destruction of distress, means our distress is destroyed by the fire of devotional service. Like that. And Shubhadha means manifestation of auspicious qualities. That devotees develop auspicious qualities as they become purified. Like that, so. Is that what you're asking? The home, traditionally within, within India, within Vedic culture, the grihasthas would have deities in their home, like that. So their home is a holy place because Krishna is there, and the entire home. Prabhupada says the way to be successful in the grihastha ashram If anyone wants to know how to be successful in a grihastha ashram, then Prabhupada says you have to keep Krishna in the center. So to keep Krishna in the center means you have to keep the deity in the center. He is the lord of the home. It's not the wife is the lord of the home or the husband is the lord of the home. The deity is the lord of the home. That's how Prabhupada was in his grihastha ashram. Now, Prabhupada says, if the grihasthas live close to the temple, then they can worship the deity in the temple. So you see most of the grihasthas live very close around the temple. We don't have deities in our home so much. Usually we have place the worship on the deities in the temple, right? Because it's so close to our home. You know, we only live 2 minutes from the temple, so we can just come to the temple, we can worship the deities here. That's the same thing. Krishna is the centre of our consciousness, or the centre of our existence. So for a grihastha, then he has to have that consciousness that Krishna is in the centre. And then his home becomes an ashram. It becomes a place of shelter. Sometimes in immaturity, there's, you know, Krishna consciousness is presented, like, because there are, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the topmost scripture, there are comments sometimes about grihastha life, actually it's grihamedi life, as being like a deep dark well, or like the wife being like a jackal, or, you know, these, I mean, the Bhagavatam says these things. The Bhagavatam says the wife is a jackal, a fox, you know, and it says that the ashram is a deep dark well. So if the ashram is based on sense gratification, grihamedi, which is what Shukadeva Goswami is actually speaking of there, then the home life is like that. But if it is not grihamedi life, it is grihastha life, and it is ashram, means a place of shelter, means Krishna is there, it's a very purifying place. It's a place to make spiritual advancement from. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in Kali Yuga, grihastha ashram is a very good ashram for a Vaishnava to take. And to be quite honest with you, I could not be in any other ashram in Kali Yuga, because I don't have the purity to, you know, stay brahmacharya my whole life. I don't have the purity to, you know, have renounced and taken sannyas life or vanaprastha life like that. In Kali Yuga that's very difficult. It's not impossible, but it's rare that that will take place. So grihastha life is a place where you can make a great amount of spiritual advancement. And you have to make a great amount of spiritual advancement in grihastha life, because you're going to spend most of your life in it. So you better make a lot of advancement while you're in there. You can't say, you know, like I was a brahmachari for 8 years, 8 years before I became a grihastha. And, you know, I can't say, well, I made my advancement then. Now I'm going to get into maya for 25 years. And then I'll get serious again at the end of it. Because that is not going to work. You know, if that is your plan, or if that is your consciousness, which no one is like that anyway, but if that was the plan of the consciousness, that formula equals taking birth in the material world once again. Right? So what it means is that the grihastha ashram is an ashram, and it's a place where you make spiritual advancement from, and it's a place where you should make a lot of spiritual advancement from. It's just a platform, that's all. And if the husband and wife are together, focused on serving Krishna, then it becomes very auspicious. And there's even though quite often, or sometimes the verses are quoted against the grihastha ashram in the Bhagavatam, there are also verses in the Bhagavatam, I think in the third or fourth canto, I can't remember exactly where, which glorify the grihastha ashram as being a very powerful place to make spiritual advancement. So it's just up to us how we want to see it. Like that. It's like, say, if there's $100 lying on the ground, so I can look at that $100, and that $100 can become a tool in which I can make a lot of advancement in Krishna's service, because I can pick that up and I can use that all for the service of Krishna. So that $100 became a great impetus for me to go back to the spiritual world. Or I could pick up that same $100, put it in my pocket, and think now I can use it for sense gratification. So grihastha ashram is just the same thing. You can think, oh, this place where I can have sense gratification, or you can think it's a place where I can use it to go towards Krishna very rapidly. I think it's just a matter of consciousness. Yukta-vairagya.
Srila Prabhupada exactly did the same thing what he was preaching when he was in London Hospital, 1936. The doctor was amazed you've been doing an strategy of changing the effect 24 hours.
So absorbed in his consciousness. Ahoituki apratihata. Apratihata means never interrupted. That's pure. Yeah, that's pure devotional service. Never interrupted. Like that. Even when you're sleeping, it's not interrupted. That's pure devotional service. Any other question or comment?
In the beginning we face so many difficulties, we cannot give up some of the desires and some of the attachments we have, and coming to the fully surrender to face the Krishna consciousness of being fully dependent on Krishna, nothing else on mind, coming to that case from material bondages, so how can we trigger ourselves or motivate ourselves?
I mean, it's a gradual process. Krishna consciousness takes time. It doesn't happen immediately or overnight. And even after you've been a devotee for a long time, still Maya tests you all the time. No, she always says, come back to me, come back to me. She never stops saying that. Right? So it takes time to become a devotee, to become Krishna conscious, like that. So where does the motivation come from? The motivation comes from the association that we keep. So if you associate with the five powerful items of devotional service, it's where you become motivated. You chant, you do kirtan with the devotees, you associate with the devotees in a Krishna conscious way. You hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, absorb yourself in Srimad Bhagavatam, you worship the deity of Krishna, right, with great faith, and you reside in the holy place. And in that way you get inspirational motivation. Especially by association with devotees. Right? So association with devotees must be based on Krishna Katha. You see, sometimes devotees come together and they just talk Ramya Katha. They just talk, you know, they talk about this and they talk about that and they talk about this. It's not really Krishna Katha. So devotees, they should come together and they should, as much as possible, speak about topics related to Krishna. And if you do that, then you'll become motivated, you become inspired to become Krishna conscious. Basically you just follow the morning program. And if you just come to Mangalati and you stay here till the end of Bhagavatam class, by the end of that you should feel very inspired, very motivated to become Krishna conscious. And if you're not feeling like that, then you should not fall asleep. That means you were sleeping. If you stay awake, you should feel very inspired to become Krishna conscious. Any other question or comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.